Hello, everybody. This is Marshall Poe. I'm the founder and editor of the New Books Network. I've published several academic books, and one of the things I found frustrating is my inability to get them picked up in the press. There really is no PR service specifically oriented toward academic books. Recently, however, I had the opportunity to work with a PR firm in New York, RLM, on a book that I recently published. And I have to say, they did a remarkable job at a very low price. And this got me thinking. I wonder if the New Books Network and RLM could provide a service that would promote academic books. So the folks at RLM and I put our heads together and we came up with a package. It is specifically targeted toward people like you, people who write academic books. So if you're interested, you should go to the NBN website and click publish. Publicize your book, and there you'll find some information about the services that the NBN and RLM are offering. What we really want to do is provide you with value for money. As far as we know, no such service exists. This is the first of its kind, and we really hope it is successful, and we hope that it helps you get the word out about your academic book.
Welcome to New Books in Israel Studies, part of the New Books Podcast Network. I'm Peter Bergerman, and today we're talking to Yaakov Yadgar about his new book, Israel's Jewish Identity Crisis, State and Politics in the Middle East. The book provides a novel analysis of the interplay between Israeli nationalism and Jewish tradition, arriving at a fresh understanding of the Israeli-Palestinian conflict through its focus on internal questions about Israeli identity. Yaakov Yadgar, congratulations on the publication of the book.
Thank you, Peter, and thank you for having me on the show.
It's my pleasure. I suppose a good place to begin would be to ask you what your motivation for this book was in the first place.
Frustration. I guess my main motivation for embarking on this project as a whole has been specific frustration with the predominant discourse on Israeli nationalism and its claim to Jewishness. Specifically, I've been very uncomfortable with the way concepts and categories which are allegedly universal but obviously embodied in histories and cultures are applied to the Israeli, Zionist, and Jewish cases as if these categories don't carry a baggage with them, as if what we use to analyze Europe at a certain point of time immediately applies to Israel, and then we can go on and understand both history and contemporary reality. Or let me put it more crudely, I'm frustrated with a discourse that narrates a simplified narrative of secularization and modernization that assumes Israel to be essentially a secular nation state like all other nation states in Europe, let's put it like that, that is somehow forced into a complicated relationship with its religious past, usually we are told due to the coercion of this minority of religious Jews. I think this simply misses the picture. It misses a whole array of issues having to do with the historical nature of Judaism, of Zionism, of Israeli nationalism. And most of my work in recent years has focused on that. My previous book, Sovereign Jews, aimed at maybe giving a more wider perspective of these conceptual issues. This book, Israel's Jewish Identity Crisis, was more immediately motivated with a sense that there's a fundamental feature of Israeli politics that simply evades commentators. I'm speaking of the charged, ultimately unresolved nature of how the state identifies as a Jewish state or as a state for Jews.
Right.
I also narrate in my preface, I'm sorry, just to complete this, I also narrate in my preface a more immediate motivation. I really came to understand that I should write the book when I was teaching a course on, what was it, religion and politics in Israel, while the campus was teeming with students' politics regarding the conflict. And I found that the students couldn't really see how internal issues of religion and politics correspond with external issues of the conflict. And as I see it, these are two aspects of the same issue. And I hope that the book brings this to the fore.
I absolutely, and I think we'll talk about the conflict, the Israel-Palestine conflict, at the very end of this. But what one thing struck me in your book, which never occurred to me as before, and I'm somebody who's not completely unfamiliar with the concept of nationalism, is that in fact there seems to be a fundamental problem here, insofar as Zionist ideology, based, which is a Western European nationalist, quote unquote secularist undertaking, is secularist only insofar as it is kind of, recognizes its anti-Christian roots. And I wonder if you can speak a little bit about that.
Well, yeah, I think the issue of how we identify Zionism vis-a-vis secularism and modernization is one of the major issues to tackle in order to understand modern-day Israel. Israel is an interesting state for many reasons. One of them is that the state actually emerges out of an ideology. So first comes the ideology, then comes the project to manifest the ideology, and then this project brings to life a state which is shaped in its light. It's almost commonsensical. It's almost trivial to say that that Zionism was the secularization of Judaism or Jewishness or Jewish tradition. But when you study what the meaning of this secularization is, all you're left with is big question marks. So obviously, there was an anti-rabbinical motivation that drove much of the, reinvention of Zionist ideologues. But beyond that, when you consider their claim to Jewish nationalism and you study how they understood Jewish nationalism, you're left with a very murky notion of what this secularization is about, specifically when put into the context of the larger critique of secularism that really has primarily to do with the sources of this thesis in Europe and questions the very viability of the duality of secular versus religious. When this criticism is applied to Israel, you can see that the theopolitics of the state are to a large degree just a reformulation of what we would usually call a religious worldview. Just, well, the place of God is taken now by the sovereign nation state. But to see this as an alleged secularization doesn't really make much sense.
Right. There is, in fact, no true separation of church and state in Israel. I mean, on a very basic level.
Well, let's stop and consider our vocabulary. Church and state as a duality emerges out of a specific history and culture. In Israel, there is no church because Judaism does not have a church. And to think of the synagogue as the equivalent of a church is simply a mistake. We have books on secularization and or secularism in Israel that carry this synagogue and state in their title, or at least in their in the text, as if it's equivalent to church and state.
Right.
Judaism is not a religion in the sense that Christianity has come to be a religion. The term itself is such a complicated and charged one. The synagogue is not a church. Synagogue does not function as a church. Judaism has never had the institution of such a church. So the different histories of Jews, the different traditions of Jews that kind of coalesce in Israel with the establishment of the state brings to life a much more complicated relationship. So not only is there a separation between church and state, to see the state as supposedly essentially secular from the get-go is a problematic
So, Yaakov, I suppose then I'd want to ask, what do you perceive Israel's Jewish identity crisis to be? And perhaps a related question that follows on from that, what is so Jewish about the Jewish state?
Peter, this is exactly the Jewish identity crisis that I'm speaking of. The inability continuing unsuccessful attempt to give a viable, agreed upon, convincing answer to the question of the meaning of Israel's Jewish identity. What does it mean for Israel to be a Jewish state? Now, for some people, some prominent strata in Israeli society, this very question is a problematic one because they would argue Israel is not a Jewish state. Israel is a state of Jews. If you read the liberal Zionist papers, for example, this would be almost a recurring theme that it is wrong to refer to Israel as a Medina Yehudit, as a Jewish state, because they read this as immediately implying that there should be some religious element to the politics of the state. This has to do with the fact that, at least from this liberal Zionist point of view, the duality of secularism versus religion necessitates that anything that is Judaism is of religion. The duality, the binary, simply doesn't allow for an understanding of Jewishness and Judaism in a broader sense, of Jewish tradition in a broader sense, that doesn't necessarily follow what the secularist point of view would see as religious. Now, Israel claims a Jewish identity. This is actually the most fundamental element of the politics of this nation state. The reason for its being is being the nation state that is aimed at Jews or at Judaism. And this is where the identity crisis comes to be. How does Israel manifest this claim in a setting of modern political, non-theocratic nation statehood? Now, let's stop for a second and see these two terms. I often throw them and people get confused as what do I mean by that? A Jewish state, in this very narrow usage I have in mind, right, would be a state that corresponds essentially to some sense of Judaism. This does not have to be rabbinical Judaism. This does not have to be halachic Judaism. Jewish history really provides us with such a wealth of understanding of what Judaism is, but there will be some positive correspondence between the constitution of the state, the laws of the state, the way the state understands itself, and what we would call Judaism. Again, I can't give you an exact description of this because this is really an open question. A state of the Jews, on the other hand, simply says that the majority of the population is of Jewish origin. But then the crisis is further exacerbated by the fact that the state itself cannot account for what makes one Jewish. It designates the job of being the gatekeeper of deciding who's a Jew and who's not a Jew to someone else, the rabbis in this regard, without offering an alternative to this rabbinical reading, which is really indifferent to matters of nation statehood. The rabbinical Judaism developed its notion of Jewishness in a state of lacking sovereignty, and it has never been truly a political question for rabbinical Judaism.
It's a very good point, and I think this leads me to my next question very, very smoothly, actually. And you note in the book, and I'm going to quote now, the inherent tension or contradiction between, on one hand, a secularist discourse and conceptual framework born out of the history and politics of the modern European nation state, which designates secular rational politics and religion into separate realms of human life, and on the other hand, the particularities of Zionist and Jewish histories, which do not obey this framework's expectations, and I'm end of quote. And to illustrate this point, you use the example of religious conversion to show that in present-day Israel, it is difficult, if not impossible, to separate the phenomenon of Israeli nationhood from the idea of Jewish nationhood. And I wondered if you could please walk us through your argument here.
Well, you know, anyone who follows Israeli politics or follows the news from Israel could really be perplexed by the fact that the religious issue of conversion, the fundamentally religious issue of conversion conducted by rabbis and the way they understand conversion to Judaism, so Giyur, this is a specific, specific act that we're talking about, is a political matter. Why do secular newspapers, for example, and secular politicians continuously intervene and get involved and criticize and comment on the way some rabbis conduct or interpret the law regarding Giyur? And also related to this, another perplexing phenomena is the perception by most Israelis, from the left and from the right, religious and secular and traditional, the common view in Israel that a growing population within the state of citizens who immigrated legally to the state, who happened not to be Jewish, they immigrated to the state and received almost immediate citizenship by the application of the law of return that yes. allows citizenship also to relatives of Jews. Why is the consensus in Israel determines these people to be a problem? Why, to quote a liberal Zionist a scholar, why is this third group, third as in not Jews and not Palestinian Arabs, what are they, a time bomb? I'm quoting someone here.
Right.
And I think the two are obviously related, and they can be answered by asking a third question, which is, again, a naive question. Let us consider this. How does one become a member of the nation that the state of Israel is sovereign in the name of? So how does one become a member of the Israeli nation? Mm-hmm. What does the state allow by way of naturalization into part of the collective that is the nation of which Israel is the nation state? The answer is, crudely, the answer is that there is no gate offered by the state of Israel. What I'm referring to here, again, to maybe untangle some of these questions that I'm asking, the state of Israel and Zionist ideology preceding it has not developed a political, independent, not religious, as in not being dictated by rabbinical interpretations of Jewish law, understanding of Jewishness. And when the state needs now to govern and maintain the borders between the in-group and the out-group, it relies on a rabbinical gatekeeping exercise, which, as I noted earlier, really is not a political tool in the sense that it is not interested in the politics of the nation state. The rabbis famously, historically, really didn't encourage people to convert into Judaism. They didn't really encourage the growing of the community by way of conversion, which is, from the point of view of the state, a problem. At the same time, Israel, being constituted on a demographical requirement of keeping a majority of, conserving a majority of Jews over non-Jews in Israel, finds the presence of non-Jews within the nation as a problem, which shouldn't really be so if you consider liberal democracy as your, as your horizon in this regard. So ultimately, I think the issue of the controversy, the political controversy surrounding conversion, shows us the problem of the application of the idea that Israel is only a state of the Jews, only in the sense that it doesn't have to carry a normative sense of Judaism, without the state itself or the politics of the state or the ideology that manifests the state, without them offering a viable, independent from rabbinical authority, venue for joining the Jewish or the Israeli nation.
Right. And could I maybe give one kind of even more, for me, perhaps a stranger example? I have many friends who converted through non-Orthodox streams of Judaism, so either through Reform or through Masorti or through the conservative movement in North America, who are now citizens of Israel and became citizens of Israel on the basis of these conversions, which are kind of accepted by the government as Jewish enough to get in, but once they get there, they're really not on the same, let's say, level as people who did Orthodox conversions.
Well, yeah, of course. And this has to do also with the developing, how would I call it, the politics of the denominations of Judaism inside and outside of Israel. But to confuse even more the picture, and I'm sorry, my answers will not really clarify the confuse. Think about not those cases of people converting outside of Israel and immigrating to Israel. But think about those people who immigrated to Israel, again, legally and received immediate citizenship yes. by virtue of them being descendants of Jews.
Yes.
Who are then required or encouraged, not required, I'm sorry, they're encouraged, strongly encouraged by the state, actually through, of all state institutions, through the army.
That's right.
Go and figure this. an army in which the rabbis usually don't serve, or at least they prefer not to serve.
Yeah.
Why are these people encouraged by the state to convert through an Orthodox process that demands of them to take on an not just an identity, but a way of life, at least for the process of during the process of conversion, which most Israeli don't know about and don't care about, and maybe are even critical of.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
So to put it again, maybe in simpler terms, the Orthodox rabbinical courts who oversee as a matter of monopoly granted to them by the state. We can't overstate that, right? This is,
right.
They have the monopoly because the state granted them this monopoly.
Yes.
They insist that the converts go through a process of not just recreation of the self, but also recreation of the social fabric within which the self is located. So these people are encouraged to send their kids, the converts are encouraged to send their kids to religious Orthodox schools. They yes. are expected to live an observant Orthodox lifestyle before they are being granted the approval of their becoming Jews. Orthodox Jews are a minority in Israeli society. Only
yes.
roughly 20% of Israeli Jews observe this lifestyle, and many view it really negatively. So yes. why does the state, who is not run by the rabbis, do that? The answer is obviously that, as I alluded to earlier, this is the only tool with which the state can supervise, in a sense, or have someone else supervise for it, yes. the gate of inclusion and exclusion within the nation.
So, Yaakov, you undertake a detailed discussion of the genesis and development of Israel's Chok HaLeum, or what we call in English the basic law, Israel, the nation state of the Jewish people, which the Knesset passed 2 years ago. For you, is this law a historical watershed or an obvious outright redundant repackaging of the Zionist goal? And a further question, I would say, where do you think is the greater Zionist ideological dishonesty, to use a provocative term, with the traditional nationalist Zionist right or the liberal Zionist left?
Peter, it really is interesting to read the reactions to the law over a long decade of debates and controversies surrounding it before it, and ever since it became a law. It's interesting to see how the reactions both and at the same time claim that it is such a historical watershed, ominous or very promising, depending on your point of view, and at the same exactly. time that it is simply trivial in specifying written law what the Zionist project has always been about, what Israel has always been about.
Yes.
I think one fruitful way to understand the nation state bill and the controversy surrounding it and the discussions surrounding it is to think about it as an attempt primarily to buttress and reiterate the idea of Israel as the state of Jews, especially mm-hmm. the interpretation of this identity as legitimizing and even demanding the preference of Jews as a collective, at least, if not as individuals, over others, primarily Palestinian Arabs.
Yes.
You could see this easily in the first instances of the bill, where the main impetus of the law was to highlight Israel's Jewish identity over its democracy, and from this to derive at a legitimation of, for example, allowing segregation in settlements or allowing the establishment of settlements for Jews only, a practice which has been ruled illegal or unconstitutional by the Supreme Court 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
But very interestingly, what happened is that when the formulators of the law came to try and maybe again buttress this sense of the Jewish the state of Jews, they were also required to maybe account for, even if only as a lip service, for a definition of Israel as a Jewish state. And the law, I think anyone who could read it can see that does a very muddled work, very muddled job in defining Israel's Jewishness. It at some point it's really abstract. At some point it really is trivial. At other point it you know, it makes simply little sense in its claim of making Israel a Jewish state. I think the law is interesting in this regard because it is a manifestation of the crisis. The proposal in 2009 and the discussion emanating from it until 2 years ago, summer 2 years ago, brought to life a very heated conversation and debate and a lot of misunderstanding regarding Israel's claim to Jewish identity, exactly because there is no agreed upon understanding of what this claim amounts to. Well, who's more problematic? Is the left or the right more in a bigger of a problem? I'm rephrasing your question, not to use it. Because obviously we are judgmental here in a sense, but this is not a... I hope it's a study and not an inquisition of the case.
Absolutely. And I would even rephrase my question even a third time and say, you know, who's more dishonest with themselves, the traditional nationalist right or the liberal Zionist left? I guess that's what I'm trying to very provocatively get at.
Maybe, again, maybe it's trivial, but still deserves to be mentioned that while it is the case nowadays in Israel, if you read the papers, to identify between secularism and liberalism and leftism.
Yes.
It is not historically the case that that secularism has been the monopoly of only one side in Israeli political map or the Zionist political map. To put it differently, the Israeli and the Zionist right have always also been vehemently secular, at least historically so. So secularism and the challenges that this secularist self-understanding poses is relevant for both cases. I think the liberal Zionist and my book really gives much more attention to the liberal Zionist discourse.
Yes.
I think I think they are simply much more interesting, and they bring to the fore much more clearly the identity crisis at hand, exactly because of the commitment to at least the liberal rhetoric, if not to liberalism itself. Let me put it crudely. An understanding of Israel as a state of Jews immediately touches upon racial notions of nationhood. Let's call it ethnicity. Let's call it ethno-nationalism. Sure. It's a very direct application of a problematic East European sense of organic nationalism that almost necessarily supersedes liberalism and democracy. Mm-hmm. So this is a problem for a liberal Zionist point of view, which would be highly critical of either, obviously, of racism, but also of racial politics and of, I want to say, limits on democracy. The Israeli right, as you know, probably better than most other people, the Israeli right has been willing to give up on liberal ideology. Recently, it has been more comfortable with the notions of illiberal democracy. But even more importantly, if we judge the Israeli right by the way the Netanyahu governments have been conducting themselves throughout the last two decades, the Israeli right seems to be simply falling in the footsteps of the religious Zionism in Israel, or at least allowing the religious Zionist point of view, which puts the state in the role of God and then worships both of them as if they were one, as dictating what the meaning of right-wing Zionism means. And this is not an uninteresting case, but in a sense, it's a more simple application of this illiberal organic nationalism that we see in Eastern Europe. And here, the identity crisis, in a sense, solves itself in a very crude way that has very little to do with Judaism and with Jewish traditions, and has much to do with the history of nationalism in modern Europe.
Right. And I think one interesting point, and you kind of bring this out in the book, you know, some people really on the, let's say, the Marxist left now, so scholars like Shlomo Avineri, I mean, to say that, you know, to your Marxist Zionist to the degree Avineri says he is, contains a contradiction. Because if you're such a strong internationalist and a nationalist, you know, to say that, well, I'm an internationalist that's a Zionist, there's a contradiction here somewhere from an ideological point of view.
I agree. And I think one of the questions that brings this contradiction to life, or the attempt of the, or the problematic synthesis, if you like, of these two different elements of Jewish nationalism or Zionism and liberalism or Marxism or internationalism or socialism, is indeed the question of how Jewish identity or the claim to Jewish nationalism is understood in this regard. Avineri is very interesting in this regard because not only is a main scholar, probably the most prominent scholar of Zionist ideology in our time, not to discount others, obviously, but yes, a very influential formulator of these ideas, but also more recently, he holds a prominent role as a public intellectual around which a lot of the debate on secularism and Israeli nationalism has coalesced, specifically because Avineri argues that secularism per se is not an ideology. That secularism always comes as a template for other ideologies. In his case, I guess the preferred one would be socialism, or at least social democracy. But it's interesting to see how he corresponds with other secularist spokesperson who see their commitment to secularism as superseding everything else, including, in a sense, their commitment to liberalism and to Jewish nationalism.
Right.
Within the framework of Israeli nationalism, which is the source of the problem.
Right. But I think I agree with you completely that secularism is not such an ideology. Internationalism is, and Zionism is. So someone like the figure, if we stick with, you know, the Marxist Zionists, at least on this, there's a massive contradiction in ideological contradiction to me. And I find that at times rather bizarre.
I think it comes to light most clearly nowadays, if you read the public discourse, if you follow the public discourse in Israel, not surrounding internationalism or Marxism or socialism, but specifically surrounding notions of liberty and individualism. Because the tension between this commitment to individual liberty and the commitment to a sense of Israel being a state of Jews, the contradiction simply is too apparent to ignore. But still, sometimes you can read many comments who do ignore it.
Right. So moving on a little then, I would say focusing on the nature of Jewish-Israeli society, you note the book, and I quote again, a looming danger by which Israeli Jews' indifference to matters of what would usually be termed, quote-unquote, Jewish tradition, might bring about a national political, as defined in the Zionist outlook, disintegration, end of quote. Now, there's now an effort to stave off this danger through the establishment of the Jewish Identity Administration, which notably, and I was rather interested to read that, located inside the Ministry of Religious Services. Now, such a phenomenon seems to play directly to your argument. And a further comment, perhaps, and perhaps we can discuss both of these things together, through your discussion of the birthright or the Taglit program, we seem to see a strange diametric opposition where, on one hand, diaspora Jewish Jews, or in other words, those who have some sort of Jewish religious identity, no matter how tenuous, are helped through the Taglit program to gain knowledge about Israel, which they lack. And on the other hand, we see Israeli Jews through the Jewish Identity Administration program who are helped to gain knowledge about their Judaism, which they lack. Perhaps you could elaborate on both of those points, please.
Yes. Peter, I must stress first that the sense of a looming danger, the sense that the growing, or what is perceived as a growing indifference and ignorance and really lack of general knowledge regarding matters Jewish among Israeli Jews is a looming danger, this sense has been, this is not my own perception or my own point on the matter, but rather a recurring theme in the discourse during the Zionist, in the Zionist movement before the establishment of the State of Israel and following it. In a sense, the idea that there's a problem, that within the project that is a Jewish nationalist or self-perceived as a Jewish nationalist project, within it there's a growing indifference and indifference towards and ignorance of Judaism itself and Jewishness and the history of Jews, in a sense, is in the DNA, if you like, or it's in the very fabric of Zionism and Israel as the state. And I guess another way of putting it is that what I refer to as a more a contemporary manifestation of Israel's Jewish identity crisis has been always there, manifesting itself in different ways. What is interesting to see now is how the attempts at amending for this indifference, the attempts at encouraging Israeli Jews, to be at least less ignorant of their Jewish traditions, to be more positively corresponding with a sense of tradition or history, or simply put, Judaism, how controversial they are, how they are seen immediately, as falling into the rubric of religious coercion, mm-hmm. which would only make sense if you live in a binary world where secular is the anti-religious and religious is Jewish. So I actually note this lingual exercise, or this exercise in translation that tells us so much about this issue. When when Haaretz newspaper was commenting on one of those initiatives to encourage Jewish education, the Hebrew title was of the paper was speaking of religious education. Mm-hmm. And the English translation was referring to Jewish education. Uh-huh. And this almost unseen identification between Jewish religion, as it is understood in a very specific straitjacket of Orthodox Judaism, and Judaism is part of the problem, that the wide horizon of potential understanding of Jewishness and Judaism is simply left unseen or hidden in plain sight. So the state plays a very heavy hand in encouraging a sense of commitment to Jewish tradition, to Jewish identity, to Judaism, but it does so in two different ways when it refers to Israeli Jews and to non-Israeli Jews or diaspora Jews. Right. And the difference is fascinating, because when it comes to non-Israeli Jews, again, there's very little controversy. There's a wide agreement among Israelis that the best way to go about encouraging their commitment to the state of Israel, that is, encouraging their political commitment to the political project that is a nation state called Israel, is through Jewish religion. Right. So one of the latest manifestations of this is that during the debate of the nation state bill, there were suggestions that the law would include a declaration that the state should encourage and educate Israeli Jews to know about their heritage, about the tradition, about the religion. And this clause was vehemently criticized by liberal Zionists as amounting to religious coercion.
Right.
The final bill that was passed by the Israeli parliament, the Knesset, didn't let go of the clause altogether. It simply designated this Judaizing tool, if you like, yes, to diaspora Jews. So the law now says that Israel will encourage knowledge and engagement with matters of tradition and religion also, right, among diaspora Jews.
But the irony, of course, is that the vast majority of American Jews, certainly in Canadian Jews, are Reform and not Orthodox.
Yes. And in Israel, With one of the interesting questions is how come Reform Judaism is such a weak, relatively speaking, denomination, where yes. a vast majority of Israeli Jews are not Orthodox. So why don't they find their Jewish identification through the Reform establishment? This is a wide question. I don't deal with it in my book. I think it has to do with both history of the movement and its relation to Zionism, but also maybe more fundamentally so with the fact that the role that the Reform Synagogue or the Reform Congregation fulfills for the American Jew is fulfilled in Israel by the state. So Israeli Jews do not need the Reform Synagogue because they have the state upholding for them the Jewish identity.
That's a very good point. So you're saying in a way, the state, it's not as religious as, say, going to say an Orthodox community or defining yourself as Orthodox, but it's Jewish enough. It kind of keeps the citizen Jewish enough. Is that what you're...
I know it goes against the grain of the predominant discourse on Israel to say so, but I'll be provocative in sure. saying that the one group within Israeli Jewish society that really needs what is called religious coercion in Israel are those non-religious people or those who identify as secular Israelis who still, value their Jewish identity. I'm not talking about those universal, vehemently secularist, anti-nationalist Israelis for whom really this doesn't make any sense. I'm talking right. about those proverbial Israeli from the street, you know, those secularist by default because they're not religious yes. Israelis, for whom being a Jew is primarily a matter of personal and political implication. They are members of the majority. They are those of whose the state is, right? It belongs to them in a sense. Right. And for them, the fact that the state enforces a very crude, a very narrow, a very problematic interpretation of certain understanding of Jewish law, which really have very little to do with the sense of, a rabbinical interpretation of this law.
Sure.
For these people, this enforcement of such a Jewish, what we call in Hebrew, tzivyon yehudi, right? A Jewish you. To the yes. to the general heir, it allows them to identify with the majority. It allows them not to feel right. part of a minority, and to have a claim to, well, a part of sovereignty.
Right. In that case, then, can there be, in your opinion, such a thing as "quote unquote" non-Jewish Israeli nationalism? And if so, how might that look?
Well, that's one of the most interesting questions, I think, in the history of Israeli political culture. Yeah. Specifically because we do have, both in the history and in contemporary politics, very systematic and, how would I say, stubborn attempt at doing exactly that, defining a nativist Israeli identity, which would be primarily based on territory and maybe language. But the problem, and I'm referring, if the listeners know, I'm referring to the Canaanites or the young Hebrews
right. Right.
In the 1940s and 50s, and more recently, groups such as Ani Israeli, I am Israeli, who yeah. petitioned the court, requesting that the court orders the state to register them as members of the Israeli nation, as opposed to other nations they are registered under in the Israeli population registry. The problem with such attempts at defining an Israeli nationality is simply that they ignore the conflictual history of the Zionist enterprise and the State of Israel. In other words, it could be seen, logically, it's not a problem to see how within the nation State of Israel, there develops a national identity that we could call Israeli that is maybe not even independent from Judaism, but even defines itself as against Judaism,
yes.
which was the case of the Canaanites. I think in the immediate term, this is not a viable option because it ignores that the configuration of power within which this identity now develops is premised on some Zionist understanding of Jewish nationalism. Maybe more clearly, this came to light with this what I mentioned earlier, this petition to the court, which was vehemently rejected by the state and ultimately by the court, who said, simply put, there is no such thing an Israeli nation. So both the institutions of the state actively negate the viability of this development of an Israeli nationalism, which is independent from Judaism, because it would undermine the very reason for existence of the state itself.
That's a very good point, and it's, I think, a very good way to segue into my one of my final questions. And that's why, while our focus to now has, I'm going to start that again. Hold on, let me just mark that. That was a really stupid thing to say. Okay, hang on. Okay, I think that helps me segue very well into the following question, which is, while our focus to now has been inward towards Israel and kind of diaspora Jewish communities, there is certainly an important external dimension to your argument. How does all of this relate to the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, Yaakov?
Well, that's the big question that, in a sense, hovers over the whole book. As I say in the preface, my way of engaging with it is going through the Israeli, in a sense, self-identity issue to see how it reflects outside on the conflict. The Israeli collective self, in a sense, or the Israeli political self, is engaging in this conflictual relationship while being internally conflictual. I'll put it differently, maybe more, hopefully more clearly again. It has been the Israeli government's demand that the Palestinians recognize Israel as a Jewish state as a fundamental requirement for any peace agreement or any agreement between the two sides. So it was Prime Minister Netanyahu who explicitly made the demand more than a decade ago, but it has been part of the negotiations, I think, throughout. The interesting fact is that if you ask Israelis themselves, if you ask the Israeli side itself, what does it mean for you to be a Jewish state, as was manifested by the nation state bill or the debate about it, is a very murky question. I mean, the answer is far from being clear, exactly because this self-identification issue is a matter that is given to conflicting interpretations. Now, another way of assessing the influence of this identity crisis on the conflict is to see how it is solved ultimately. Mm-hmm. Beyond everything, beyond this all these interesting issues of how Israelis understand their Jewishness and so on and so forth, what's clear is that the configuration of power of the Israeli nation state is established on a simple arithmetic of us and them, of demography.
Right.
Of a majority of people whom the state would consider the in-group, the nation for which it is sovereign, mm-hmm. and others who are by nature, by the virtue of them being the outgroup, immediately understood as posing a threat to the state.
Yes.
It is a fact that when you start counting people by blood and put scare quotes around blood, because this is not a literal understanding of genetic identity. Sure. But once you start counting people, as the national logic almost demands, not necessarily, but certainly as the organic understanding, Eastern European kind of nationalism understands it, the very birth of people becomes a political matter. The right. very procreation, the most natural element of human of humankind. So, in a sense, what I'm saying is that the 1967 situation, or the post-Six-Day War situation, where Israel rules over a large population of Palestinians by way of military rule, is only part of the problem here, because it is something that has to do with a very constitutive logic of the state of Israel already in 1948 that determines this identity crisis, which directly implies on the conflict with non-Jews.
Right. So that leads me very, very smoothly into my final question. And Yaakov, what are your suggestions for solving Israel's current Jewish identity crisis?
I do not pretend to have an answer. I do not know the answer. I am very happy with taking the position of maybe critiquing and highlighting the problems without pretending to be able to give an answer. My critique is not motivated by some hidden agenda. I can tell you, this is a radio or an audio medium. So maybe not everybody sees me, but I can already appreciate how it could be that my facial hair would lead some people to assumptions regarding my preferred solution. I think what comes out of my exploration is that there's an acute need for those who are interested, in preserving a sense of Jewish collectivity, who do see a sense of Jewishness and Jewish or Judaism as an important part of their life. For such people, there's a need for a reconsideration of the meaning of Jewish politics. We've assumed for many years that Jewish politics now, in a sense, coalesce around the state of Israel and how it interprets it. But Israel is struggling with this question, and it would be highly valuable, I think, for groups of intellectuals, for engaged people, to think together, to debate and bring about a discussion which would necessarily have much more than one opinion regarding what a meaningful dialoguing with the various ways in which Jewish traditions and histories can be interpreted can then manifest itself politically. It wouldn't necessarily be through a nation state. It wouldn't necessarily be through the framework of what we now understand as various manifestations of Zionism, but it would it could claim an authentic sense of dialoguing with the meaning of Jewishness and Judaism.
Right. Yaakov Yadgar, I feel I've monopolized your time quite enough for one morning, especially one sunny morning like this. Before we go, could you please tell us what projects you are currently working on?
Thank you, Peter. Well, in the most immediate sense, I'm dealing with a project of staying sane at home during lockdown.
That's right.
And watching the sun outside and not going outside because we're not allowed yet. More generally, I think the logical development of my current work would be indeed to go towards this issue that we raised last, encouraging a discussion in which the very fundamental questions regarding Jewish politics are being asked and discussed, not necessarily by way of solving them, but simply by way of, in a sense, re-asking the fundamental questions that have motivated so much of the politics of the Jewish world in modern times. We are hoping as a group maybe to hold this discussion. We had ideas of doing this, of just re-asking or unasking the Jewish question in light of both Israeli and diaspora politics. And it has been now put on hold. But my hope is that we will be able to further develop it in a very near future, God willing.
God willing. Yaakov Yadgar, thank you very, very much for your time.
Thank you, Peter.